How are you? My name is Kieran. Fine, thanks, and yourself, too.
Good. Hey, I was worried that I would be late.
You made it.
Well, you were able to release me from that physical meeting.
Okay.
I see the apology of
Honorable Mamaraka.
Okay.
The DJ.
All right.
Yeah.
But
I've seen the minister. Oh yeah, he's in.
That's great. We must ask Enrico to check with Nshuri and also Honorable Dango.
I'm not in the meeting, Jefferson. I send me a message to see level 12.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Let me just check with my Dango. And usually what expect that to be sent to him by
I did that.
At least four.
I did that. But the members who are in we do form a quorum because you just Honorable High, Honorable Matevula, and Honorable Blaney and Honorable Brothers, so we can proceed.
Okay. All right. Let me take this opportunity to formally open the meeting, extending a word of welcome to all the attendees, the honorable members, the minister and the team. Today's meeting, as we all agree, we have effectively two items. Two items. The first one is, like as you have indicated, we'll have two presentations. One in terms of the civil aviation bill, and then and also the presentation on the impact of the July incident and on both the transport and also related activities that could have been charged by the looting and also the blockage of roads. We want to appreciate the presence of the minister. We know that it's always difficult to secure his presence, but we are in the fact that Wednesday is the cabinet meeting, and also you indicate to us as to whether we have the new DM today. But I think what is also critical is to also indicate the extending apology of last month because of the suspended ceremony. But you have also received the apology from the Honorable Mamaro Khan and also understand the DG. Let us then now without any waste of time hand over to the minister for his opening remarks. Over to you, minister.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson of the Select Committee, Honorable Kenny Moiman. Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Morning, Minister. You are very honorable.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can also see me.
Yeah, I can definitely see you, Minister.
I might be addressing you sleeping, Chairman. No, thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the committee. Our track record as a country with impeccable credentials on aviation safety, particularly in respect of commercial aviation, is something we must be proud of and sustain at all costs. This includes extending a similar track record to non-commercial aviation. As a signatory to the Chicago Convention and a council member of ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization, we must do everything in our power to lead by example in ensuring and sustaining safety of our airspace. There is no doubt that once this bill is passed into law, it will ensure that South Africa continues to meet the international obligation in the civil aviation arena. This, in fact, will strengthen the sector's contribution to South Africa's economic development and to serve as a catalyst for increased trade, tourism, and job creation. We cannot emphasize enough that this bill enables us to continue making strides in our contribution to the global effort of aviation safety. Since the promulgation of the Civil Aviation Act of 2009, certain sections of Chapter 4 of the Act have never been brought into effect due to practical difficulties in the establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. This bill addresses all these issues, and its passage will exponentially strengthen our aviation incident and accident investigation. The independence of this board is an important factor that will bolster the robustness and objectiveness of all incident and accident investigations. The bill also provides for the conclusion of a performance agreement between the minister and the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. This is important in ensuring that the board delivers on its mandate and its work is in keeping with the provisions of the international conventions and treaties. In streamlining and strengthening of appeals mechanisms, it is critical in ensuring that those who are aggrieved by decisions taken in terms of this act have recourse. Streamlining the appeals bodies also creates a single focal point for all appeals, which ensures accessibility to all those who wish to lodge appeals. The importance of broadening the mandate of the South African Civil Aviation Authority, SACAR, to include environmental protection is an important step towards realizing our own commitment to meeting the targets of the Paris Agreement on climate change. The bill further introduces an important provision of making SACAR a preferential creditor. However, this is only in respect of monies collected and held on its behalf. This is no different from an employer collecting tax revenue on behalf of SARS. Such monies are not related to any commercial arrangement between SACAR and a particular entity, but is collected on behalf of SACAR in terms of the law. The bill similarly seeks to strengthen the South African Civil Aviation Authority by strengthening a number of governance issues, which include provisions for the removal of the Commissioner for Civil Aviation. This also extends to the provision of a shareholder representative on the board of the authority. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, for the opening remarks where you were able to highlight the background against which this civil aviation amendment bill is introduced, and you also outline the purpose among them, the challenges and conducts to make provision for the establishment of the safety investigation board, but also take good care of the environmental aspect of it, and also incorrect references to ministries and also government institutions, but also to make provision for criminal offences. We are happy with the purpose and the background as articulated by the minister. We will then, without any waste of time, allow the DG or the designated person then to present the item.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the committee. Okay, let me show myself so that Chairperson and the Honorable people can see that you're not talking to. That's me, Chris Savisa.
Welcome, Mr. Savisa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, our Minister Mbadu. Thank you very much for the opening remarks, Minister. And I can just say what we are going to do here, we have prepared a presentation which that covers as per what the Select Committee was wanting us to do. That will be in the issues of the aviation and also what has happened with the route-based transport, as well as the issues of aviation. If I would be given that opportunity, I can introduce my team that is going to be engaging with the portfolio committee in front of the minister and making sure that we amplify in some other areas where the need arises. I think, Chairperson, if that would be acceptable, we will take that cue and as prepared by the team at transport. Let me take you from the Chairperson whether that would be an acceptable approach from us. Thank you, Chair.
It is acceptable. I also wanted to check whether do you have the Deputy Minister here?
No, she's not here. We have a clash.
Okay.
She's representing us at the Portfolio Committee.
Okay, thank you for that clarity, Minister. Let's then deal with the introduction of the chief, as indicated by Mr. Savisa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable Minister, thank you once again, Minister, for the guidance. We'll take you from what our Minister has said on issues of aviation, on issues of road-based transport, as I indicated. And we'll also look into the issues of rail transport as well. So what we are going to do, I've got members of the team that are here who has been working very hard on the presentation as a collective. And I needed to say we have assigned Prasant Mohan to take us through the presentation. And I do have also the team from the aviation sector led by Ms. Mshe, who is going to be also amplifying some other issues where necessary. And then I got Ngwakoma Makaipie, who is also heading the rail branch. They are all here. So it's just a way of introduction quickly, Chairperson. And I think what we're going to do now, I'll hand over to Prasant Mohan to take us through the whole presentation. And I will request that members of my team would also amplify where necessary as and when required, and especially when it comes to question and answer session. But allow us, Chairperson and Minister, to engage as we go along. Maybe Prasant will stop here and there, or especially on the rail side. Then I'll invite my colleague Mwako to amplify here and there, and then we continue and we deal with the issues of aviation. I'll ask Mayor Mshe to also do the same, and then we'll conclude, and then we'll hand over to the Chairperson and Honourable Minister. Thank you very much. I think let me, without a waste of more time now, ask Prasant Mohan to take us through the presentation as prepared. Thank you very much, Prasant. You're on the floor. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and members of the committee. I am Prasant Mohan, Chief Director, Road Infrastructure Department of Transport, and I will ask the Secretary, may I be allowed to share the presentation on the screen, please? Oh, okay. Then that presentation has been presented by my colleague.
Let's report to the second presentation.
Okay, Chairperson, I will ask her. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning to the Chairperson, members of the Select Committee, Minister, and all protocol observed. I don't know if I'm required to share the presentation from my side, or will the Secretary be assisting us with taking the presentation on the screen?
Can you address that?
Well, the department must flag the presentation on their side. We have given them hosting rights, so they can do so.
Okay, great. Thank you. Can I get an indication on whether we can see the presentation on the screen?
Indeed, it is very clear and also audible. You can keep the ground running.
Okay, then we, in terms of the table of contents, we are going to cover the background, the purpose of the bill, objectives of the bill, and we are also going to give a summary of the clauses that are incorporated in the bill, and we'll also do a reflection on the consultations that were done. So to give a bit of a background, we have the current Act, which is the Civil Aviation Act, and the Act provides for the establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, which has the powers to investigate aircraft incidents and accidents within the Republic. The Act also establishes the South African Civil Aviation Authority, and that's an authority vested with the powers to promote civil aviation safety and security. And in terms of, in his opening address, Minister referred to the practical difficulties that we encountered in proclaiming Chapter 4 of the current Act. And this is the chapter that actually talks to the establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. And the purpose of the bill, it addresses the challenges encountered in applying the current act that we have. It rectify identified inconsistencies and makes provision for latest developments in aviation. It also provides for the establishment of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. It gives the CAA environmental protection oversight function, because currently the functions at the CAA are only limited to aviation safety and security. So this act therefore gives them environmental protection oversight function in addition to the two that they are currently performing. It further rectifies incorrect references to ministries and government institutions. It also provides for additional criminal offenses in the sphere of civil aviation security. It provides for the effective enforcement mechanism and gives the minister additional powers to make recommendations, to make regulations, apologies. And in terms of the objectives of the bill, the bill seeks to strengthen the Aviation Safety, Security and Environmental Protection Regulatory Framework to ensure sustainability and stability of the civil aviation industry. As a country, there are certain international obligations that we are required to meet, and the Act, the bill therefore seeks to ensure that we meet those obligations. And the next slide then gives summary of what is actually included in the clauses to the bill. And this section then looks at clauses from clauses 1 until 16. And it talks to amending the existing and inserting new definitions, rectifying references to certain ministries and government departments, aligning the Act with Section 231 of the Constitution, removing obsolete references and effecting textual improvements, and it substitutes Chapter 4 of the current Act so that we can then redefine the establishment of an aircraft accident and incident investigation. It rectifies the provisions relating to the establishment of the South African Civil Aviation Authority and gives the South African Civil Aviation Authority environmental protection oversight function. It makes provision for the civil aviation, for the CAA as a preferential creditor in respect of any money, fees, charges or levies collected on its behalf, and it removes incorrect references and effect textual changes. And the next slide covers clauses 17 to 46, and it deals with doing away with the requirements for the development of the corporate governance plan. The CAA is not listed under it's not listed as a public entity under the schedules that are prescribed in the PFMA, and therefore it does not actually need to submit corporate plans, and therefore this clause then is actually addressing that. It also makes the bill then makes provision for an employee of the department to be a member of the Civil Aviation Authority Board. It amends the provisions relating to the appointment and removal of the commissioner for civil aviation and matters related to his or her functions and responsibility. It amending the provisions relating to the performance agreement between the minister and the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, clarifies the provisions dealing with conflicts of interest, provides for the designation of the chairperson of the National Aviation Security Committee and matters connected with the operations of that committee. And it deletes the provisions dealing with compliance notices, and it further amends the provisions dealing with appeals. And from clauses 47 to 65, the bill authorizes the minister to issue exemptions and to prescribe additional offenses and additional enforcement mechanism. It extends the power of the minister to make regulations, to further remove the procedures for the establishment of consultative structures to the regulation. And in terms of consultation, the department conducted a series of stakeholder engagement with the entities that are actually flagged here, and those entities included the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, the CAA, the Airports Company, South Africa, Air Traffic and Navigation Services, our Airline Association of Southern Africa, which represents the interests of our South African registered airline. We also had the Board of Aviation Representative of South Africa, which represents the interests of foreign registered airlines. And we also had the Civil Aviation Regulations Committee, the National Air Transport Facilitation Committee. We further consulted with National Economic Development and Labor Council and the Economic Sector Employment and Infrastructure Development Cluster Sector. And we are then articulating here that the bill was approved by Cabinet on the 5th of September 2018. And the bill was then introduced in Parliament on the 8th of October 2018. And we further then articulate here that we went to PCOT and PCOT adopted the report on the bill with amendments on the 17th of March 2021. And the bill was further subjected to the second reading debate on the 11th of May 2021 and was passed by the National Assembly and transmitted to the NCOP. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Matt, for the presentation. Let's then open the floor for engagement from honorable members. You can use your raise your hand option.
Chairperson.
I have no chapter. Honorable Khaib.
Chairperson.
Yes,
I request member to take off the presentation.
Okay. I guess she will definitely do that. Memke?
Noted, Chairperson. Technology is failing me here, but I'm attempting to... There we go. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. On the other side, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Greetings to the Minister and the team, and also to honorable members. Chair, just my concern with the presentation, it's too summarized. I was looking at my other documents of the bills that have been presented by the department. I came across the ARTO bill. It was detailed, each clause was explained what its purpose in terms of amending a particular section. But this thing of saying from clause 1 to clause 46, in between, you don't know what clause 1, clause 2 up to 46 means. It's just a summary. I'm not happy with how this was summarized. I want to also challenge Elizabeth to go back to that ARTO presentation. I know it was in the previous term, but it was because it's the only one I could see now because I couldn't look at all the presentation. It was more detailed in terms of what each clause means. But I'm just raising as a concern, but perhaps we will be dealing with all these clauses when we interact with the bill in terms of the processes, which include the public hearings and the close-by-close discussion. But it would have been better if, when it is introduced, we are given details, not just the summarized version of its clause. Just two questions then, Chair, that I pick up. I just wanted to check with regard to the aviation, civil aviation, I think it's an investigation board. My question would be, why shouldn't just have the authority, aviation, civil aviation authority, and then the investigation be a program of the authority, instead of having these two bodies. So I just wanted clarity with regard that, especially when it is reported that that particular chapter could not be implemented for various reasons that have been articulated. So my question is around that aspect. I think there was another clause. That's why I'm saying that the problem that this has not been explained. But when I look at the actual bill, there's a clause that I just want to open the actual bill because the presentation is really not helping. Can I come back on this one because I'm checking it on the bill because I saw it, but it talks about the role of a parliament. But I'll have to come back so that all I don't delay right. The meeting. Yeah, I'll have to come back in the bill.
I will give you an opportunity to come back on that one. Let me move over to Honorable Tim Bratterson.
Thank you, Chair. I echo the sentiments of Honorable Khai. My apologies this morning. I'm dealing with the after effects of the second vaccination jab, so I'm getting that little bit of a flu-y feeling. but I think I'll be all right. I also would like to see a lot more detail, so I'm just going to reserve my comment for now. Thank you.
All right. While Honorable Khai is still probably looking for that aspect, maybe let's give over to Committee Secretary just to outline processes from here. Kubana?
Thank you, Chairperson. The processes from here, Chairperson, the committee has to take a decision whether to advertise this bill in all, you know, publications, and also then whether then after advertising the bill, and then the committee will have to do, you know, the public participation. So these are the processes that at least we need to establish. The committee needs to establish. Then it means this bill, after this presentation today, then the bill will advertise. Then we request for written comments. Then after receiving the written comments, we'll come back and consider those comments. If needs be, the committee will have to decide whether then those who have, you know, who are willing, you know, to do the oral submissions, will the committee allow so? Then, that's how far the process will go, Chairperson.
Thanks for that. Let's then go back to another
file. I think I will have to raise it maybe as part of the processes because there were two bills. There's one that which is a bill from the department, and then the amended one from the portfolio committee. So I'm trying to get the one from the portfolio committee. This is where I pick up this particular issue that I wanted to raise, but I'm still battling now to get the one from the portfolio committee. The one I'm having with me right now is the one from the department or from the minister. So I say perhaps if I could just get a response on the earlier question I asked with regard to why having two bodies, the investigation board and also the authority.
Right. Nemke, can we give you the platform to respond to the question as posed by Marwa Fai?
Thank you, Chair. As I indicated in my presentation, as a country, we have a number of international obligations that we need to meet. And one of those obligations relates to the Chicago Convention. As a member state to the Chicago Convention, we are required actually to comply with ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization requirement. And in terms of the Annex 13 of the Chicago Convention, member states are required to establish an independent aircraft accident and incident investigation authority, and that needs to be independent from the Civil Aviation Authority. And what happened in 2017, we had an audit from ICAO. They came to the country to come and do their audit, and then we got a finding because the aircraft accident and incident unit was actually within the CAA, and we got a finding as a country, and they were actually saying that we are kind of creating a situation where civil aviation authorities, the referee and a player, and hence we are seeking to rectify that in this bill. And with regard, we've noted the comments from the members with regard to the summarized version of the presentation. We have prepared, because we thought that if we include all the sources, we are actually going to end up with a very lengthy presentation. But however, we've prepared a web document in a template format that actually outlines each and every clauses from clause 1 until clause 60 until clause 65, and it clearly outlines the activities that we are actually changing on each and every clause. We can make that template available to the members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you for that clarification. Are you happy with that?
Yes, I'm happy with the clarification, but I've also been able to get the issue that I wanted to raise. If you allow me. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes. Do we agree that obviously because you are struggling a bit to get the one from the committee?
I did find it. There's a section that talks about, it says it's on page 8 from line 48, and under that it says, D, the minister must submit the list contemplated in paragraph C to Parliament. E, Parliament must conduct interviews and make recommendation of at least 7 names in order of reference to the minister to appoint 5 members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. The clarity I need there, Chair, is that it says Parliament, and Parliament is made up of the two houses. So how is this going to take place? Is it each house must say conduct interviews? Can I get clarity with regard to that aspect, Chair? Because normally some of these issues that have to do with interviews are done by the National Assembly. But in this case, the clause specifically says Parliament, and Parliament is made out of the two houses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hayes. Can we get a response to that? Mary Elizabeth?
I've noted the comment, Chair, and this is one of the recommendations that we got from PCOT, and our understanding is that that Parliament was going to assist with coordinating on how to deal with this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. You are still not clarified. So this is a recommendation from the National Assembly.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. All right. I think probably then let's get a sense of from Honourable High. Are you happy with the response? And then probably we'll then engage further just to get a sense in terms of the legalese around that proposal in terms of its workability.
Chair, I just wanted to share, usually when we deal with the bills, there would be a person from legal unit of parliament, if he or she can also express a view on this particular issue.
Let's check, Community Secretary, do you have the legal advisors?
Thank you, Chairperson. We don't have the legal advisor from Parliament, but we do have the state legal advice in this meeting.
Yes, can we probably then get a sense from the state law advisor in terms of the view expressed, so that as we meet after we have advertised, at least there is a semblance of how to deal with that. It looks like this matter will have to probably then in the next meeting probably prepare ourselves on this aspect, meaning that we'll have to also get our legal advisors. But I think given how the process must unfold, can we agree that we definitely, like we have done with the previous bills that were taken before us, advertise and then deal with those written comments, and then probably we'll take it from there, unless there's an addition in terms of that.
There's a head, Chair.
Yes, from Ms. Raksha. Yeah, let's give Ms. Raksha Harisharam an opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Dr. Harishan, the Senior State Law Advisor for this matter. Chair, just to, if the remark can please be repeated, Chair, so we can reply to that. Thank you.
From the committee decision, there is a referral that was made by Honourable Hyde in terms of its responsibilities around interview. So Honourable Hyde wanted to check as to whether that the referral to Parliament include both houses or only the National Assembly. Maybe Honourable Hyde can just probably pinpoint that section again so that Ms. Hapsalan can get a sense of what you were saying.
Okay. I think it's on the first page of the amendments from the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. If you start from 1, it's 2, 3, 4, 5, and then under clause 4 on that page, it says, the minister may in a no, it's not that one. Sorry, let me further go down. Oh, then under clause 8. If you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then there's D, which says the minister must submit the list contemplated in paragraph C to Parliament. And then E says Parliament must conduct interviews and make recommendation of at least 7 names in order of preference to the minister to appoint the 5 members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. So my question is that normally when it comes to board, whether you're talking a SABC board or other boards, that is normally conducted interviews for such bodies, even with the public protector, for example. Normally boards that are appointed by the National Assembly. Usually the National Council of Provinces is not involved. So I wanted to check then on this aspect, whether this clause is okay, or it will be treated the same way that, for example, the NYDA is interviews are conducted. I just wanted clarity on that aspect. I hope I'm clear now, sir. That's
Thanks, Abba Khaif. Ms. Hashrat.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that clarity. Chairperson, we've noted that comment. If you may please come back to that question a little later, if possible. Thank you.
Thanks. Can we then pack it and agree that we will further make a research on that? Can we then, do we agree, Honourable Members, that this matter will then go for an advert on the 2 newspapers that you have agreed upon, that you have dealt with, that you have used in our previous bills that we dealt with, and then get written comments, and then adopt the report once you have processed it, and then recommend it to the House. Any opposition to that? Yes, Tim?
Chair, yes, I agree with the process. Let's just go with due process. I think advert normally indicates, and the comments normally indicate, the level of interest in the bill and the level of opposition to the bill, and then we can assess that once we receive that.
Thank you, Chief. Any seconder?
Okay, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Khal and Honourable Tim for agreeing to the way forward in terms of processing the bill, and thanks the team for the presentation. It put us in a much more better position to take the process forward. Can we then go to the next presentation, which is an update in terms of the impact of the violence of the July disruption on the transport sector. Over to you, Mohan. Let me find out from the minister as to whether is there any probably reflection that the minister would want to make before Mohan takes over on this aspect.
Yes, Chair. Can I go ahead?
Yes, Honourable Minister.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, honorable members, as it has been said before, I'm with the DDG, Mr. Chris Tlhabisa, and the team, which you have already introduced. I will just lead into this discussion with a few remarks. In recent months, we witnessed unrest characterized by acts of vandalism, looting, destruction of economic infrastructure, and blockages on the roads. This included torching of trucks, transporting goods. This event resulted in major disruptions in the supply chain and the freight and logistics sector, both on the road and rail. In contextualizing the impact on the economy, the road freight sector moves more than 70% of all industrial cargo in the country. Since the outbreak of the unrest on 9 July 2021, the national routes N2 running through the north coast of Durban and the N3 between Sidara and Arrowsmith were affected. The impact of the unrest on the N3 in relation to freight is estimated at 3.2 billion of freight per day. Since 12 July 2021, the N3 highway traffic dropped below 100 vehicles per day. Over 40 trucks were damaged at an estimated cost of 250 to 300 million, 26 of them at Moy River along N3 highway. Affected truck operators operating a cross-border service are already actively seeking alternative routes through other Southern African countries, avoiding South Africa. Cargo owners are also looking at transporting their cargo through Namibia, Angola, Mozambique, and further north. If this trend continues, South Africa is at a risk of losing its gateway status for transit freight. These developments have had an adverse impact on small businesses, such as fuel stations, truck stops, and small towns that rely on the freeway economic activity as a result of traffic using alternative routes. A number of Gauteng-bound trucks coming from neighboring countries through Bay Bridge were parked at the border for days, fearing possible violence. The closure of the N3 had a significant impact on traffic volumes that rely on this highway, which traffic is excess of 6,000 heavy vehicle per day. The four-day closure of N3 meant 12 billion worth of goods did not arrive at their intended destinations. As a consequence, the supply chain bottleneck took weeks to clear. It is important to note that Transnet declared force majeure as a result of disruptions on the rail network feeding the ports, with a knock-on effect on ports and manufacturing hubs in Gauteng and Durban Pinetown hubs. Public transport infrastructure damaged included 6 Go Durban stations in Etegwini and 4 Reavaya stations in Johannesburg municipality. In Etegwini, the public transport system and integrated fare collection system equipment and traffic signaling systems were damaged. It will cost the city of Johannesburg close to 500,000 to repair the 4 stations, whilst Etegwini will have to spend more than 550,000 to also undertake the repairs. Prasa was also affected by the unrest in both East KZN and Gauteng retail properties, development leases and stations. There is still some condition assessment still being conducted in some stations. The estimated repair cost for stations stands at 1.1 billion rand. The unrest also affected a number of service centers, which include registering authorities and driver's license testing centers, DLTC, at a total of 58 service stations were affected. 29 service centers, of which 15 were in Gauteng, and 14 in KwaZulu-Natal. 27 post office sites with service registration authorities, 2 registering authorities also serving as DLTCs, 1 in KwaZulu-Natal and 1 in Gauteng. Our core responsibility is to enable economic activity and mobility for citizens to access social infrastructure and amenities. Our plan, our action plan, therefore focuses on this enabling role, working with other stakeholders. The mining sector has identified the following challenges which rely on road infrastructure. Transportation of explosives to mines, routes details to be provided on this, security of supply for petroleum products, deployment of security. Our recovery plan consists of the following. Continue with national transport policy and regulation to level the playing field. This will be achieved once the new economic regulation model is implemented, consequent to the passage of the bill before Parliament. The Department will continue to strengthen and support our integrated law enforcement strategies along freight corridors. SANRAL has surveillance cameras on some sections, and this data is shared with NetJOG as required. Participation at an ongoing joint law enforcement operations that include unannounced visits to the freight operators, business premises along freight corridors. The department is in the process of developing an operator permit card in line with the National Road Traffic Act requirements, and this will ensure that operators are now required to become compliant to labor and immigration laws. Implementation of the freight logistics strategy intervention, which include operator accreditation, policy and regulation to support migration of freight from road to rail. Rail infrastructure investment and operational efficiency improvements. We'll continue with National Road Development Plan by SANRAL and providing support to provincial road authorities. Working with the RTMC and provinces to restore DLCA services. Give impetus to the modernization of high-volume commuter rail corridors. Support interventions that increase in rail capacity, patronage and fare revenue. Accelerate measures aimed at improving passenger security. Continue with expansion of integrated public transport networks. I thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will now invite the department colleagues to take off in terms of providing further details. Thank you very much, Chair.
So thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee. What we will do now, I'll ask my colleague to take the stage and take cue from what our minister has said. And yes, I've seen that my colleague forgot to show their faces when they are about to talk. I think we need to lead and follow our minister. Minister has been, we saw him and I would request that my colleagues do so. Thank you very much. Prasan, show your face, and I think Mwako will also do the same in Kipimanana so that we can see that it's a collaborative effort to the presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for that. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. Good morning again, Chairperson, Minister, and Honorable Members and colleagues. So now I will take you through our presentation that we've prepared for the committee. Our presentation will cover a brief introduction, the impact of the unrest, the key strategic interventions that this is cross-cutting with other departments, and then specific plans by the department. So as mentioned, the recent unrest was focused mainly in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. And what we know is that the Gauteng and KZN, they make up half of the national GDP, and almost half of the population of the country are residing in these two provinces. The unrest impacted the transport sector on various fronts. As mentioned by the Honorable Minister, the first impact was the closure of the N3, which affected the flow of goods between the two provinces. This was for 4 days, and effectively 12 billion worth of goods could not reach the designations. In addition to that, there was a lot of supply chain bottlenecks, which resulted in backlogs, which are still being cleared. And then Transnet, they had to close the port, which also affected the distribution and the supply chain supply environment. And what we know is that in Africa, the Durban port handles 70% of the imports and is a gateway to South Africa. So when this closure took place, it was, and with all the violence that took place, it was estimated that over 70 billion has been determined as the losses. And this impacts on the investor confidence and also on business survival. There was some damage to transport infrastructure, which I will take you through as well. In terms of unemployment, we estimate that 150,000 jobs were lost. We know at the beginning of the year, the unemployment data indicated that 32% is the figure of unemployment in the country. Yesterday, we heard it's now gone to 34.1%. Other impacts included the supply of food security, which was threatened. And ultimately, the majority of the poor were affected the most due to this unrest and violence. So the full assessment is still in progress, and we estimate that those figures that we provided you will likely grow, and even the unemployment will also be, will grow. And this will imply that a lot of people now will need to apply for unemployment benefits due to retrenching. There could be more court cases at the CCMA because of the retrenchments. And then the poor investment outlook, which will affect the country because we'll be unable to attract investments. And this has a direct impact on the job creation. The GDP likely to drop. The replacement value of the trucks is around 250 to 300 million. What assisted us a lot was the withdrawal of the services by the bus and taxi operators during this time. Once their services were withdrawn, people could not move very freely around. In terms of the road transport, the full impact, the hotspot areas was the Moy River, Tweedy, Escott, Bergville, Ladysmith, Sand River. So these were the key areas affected. At Moy River, there were 26 trucks that were burned, but in total, there were 40 burned or damaged during this period. As mentioned by the minister, the N3 corridor, there's 6,000 vehicles, heavy vehicles per day, and this dropped to 100 vehicles per day. And then one of the impacts of all this violence was that the operators were seeking alternative routes outside South Africa, and that includes the Namibia, Angola, Mozambique, and even further north. And this will have the adverse impact on the small economy. Some of the trucks had to be parked at Beitbridge. They didn't enter the country, so this also created a huge bottleneck at the border posts. The entry now is fully open. Initially, it was opened very cautiously, and there were some restrictions, especially during night travel. But now it's fully operational, and there's the presence of security along all the hotspots. Other areas that were impacted was the DLCA sites. Of the 29 affected sites, 27 were actually the post office, which is a registration authority where you can do transactions, and two sites where they were the full driver license testing center facilities that were affected. So the department is working closely with the RTMC and the provinces to restore those facilities. The equipment are still under repairs. The equipment that cannot be repaired will be replaced by the RTMC. the post offices are, the most of them are still closed, and those services are not restored as yet. In terms of how all this impacted the food supply in the country, we took stock in outside KZN, because the most of the problems occurred in KZN. So outside KZN, this slide indicates the availability of the different commodities and how many days stock that we had available. This was done earlier in the month. And what we found there that we were managing the risk okay on this. The areas where that we needed to focus on was the distribution agents and the warehousing facilities, and then where there were storage and agro processes. So in these areas here, they've identified what you see on the red circles is the high risk areas, and then the medium risk is the in yellow. So there's more visibility of policing at the high risk than at the low risk, but both are being monitored very closely. That's to protect the fuel in the food sector. And then the mining sector, the areas that we identified that was a high risk was the transportation of explosives and petroleum products. So there's security escorts deployed along the routes to protect these commodities. In the rail transport sector, there was a lot of damage, mainly along the retail property section of PRASA, and a lot of vandalism, especially in the Durban and Mgeni areas. I'll have a slide to indicate the financial details coming up next. And there were some railway stations that were also vandalized, and I also have some breakdown of costing on that. So these slides covers the damages to all the retail facilities along the railway lines or the rail reserves. Springfield Park, Mgeni, Amlazi, Kwamashu, and then Ispingo. So the lines that were affected was the Durban to Amlazi line, the Durban to Kwamashu line, and the main hub was in Springfield. So this is where a lot of the damages took place. So these slides indicate all the details of the damages and the extent. This slide is indicating the damages to the various railway stations that were affected. So this is the Mlazi line and the Durban North Coast line. 1.128 million damages. On the public transport side, we had to suspend services in some of the municipalities to protect the assets. There were still damages to 6 stations in Durban and 6 in Johannesburg. And 2 buses were also damaged in Kaohsiung. This is a slide indicating more data for what happened at Johannesburg. The estimated damages was 500,000 in Johannesburg, 368 in Durban, and then for the signaling, 150,000. But the estimate for the equipment is still being determined. So the key strategic interventions, so these are cross-cutting interventions in collaboration with other departments. The first one is the identification of all the hotspots along the N2, N3, and N5, where there's maximum security protection at the airports and harbors, similarly, protection. The key food production facilities and infrastructure. Earlier on, I showed you that slide with the red circles and the yellow circles, so that the high-risk areas where, and there's maximum security, the transportation of liquid fuels and food processing ingredients, and then there was temporary sales points and storages in rural towns, integrating SMMEs and spazas as part of the intervention strategies that were put in place. And from the department side, we will strengthen our policy interventions and strengthen coordination and sharing of information. And the N3, because it's the main corridor in South Africa, there's a process to revive the coordinating structure, which was chaired by the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. So there's a process to revive that structure so that the N3 can be managed more closely and monitored better. Since most of the attacks occurred at night, initially traveling was limited to daytime hours until the threat was less severe. But as I mentioned, the roads are fully open now. There's no limitation for nighttime travel, but most of the traveling takes place during the day. Some of the other interventions that are with other departments, the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, they have activated the liquid fuels task team. So besides the transportation which we are monitoring, they are also looking at other aspects in the supply chain for liquid fuels, including LP gas. The Department of Public Enterprises, they've invited the SOE representatives to be part of the teams with the police. The army has been deployed countrywide in all these hotspot areas, and they've increased visibility at retail service stations both in Durban and Johannesburg. There was police escorts for the petroleum products, the LP gas, and for transportation of explosives to mines. And there's also escorts to the borders between South Africa, Lesotho, South Africa, Swaziland. And then along the N2, N3, and N5, there's also SAPs providing monitoring and escorts along those routes currently. The SND, NDF, they're also monitoring various key strategic points in different parts of the high-risk areas. So this slide here indicates all the details where they are, the loading terminals and also the storage facilities, the pipeline facilities. And they've also improved, increased police visibility at the service stations in Durban and surrounding areas. So this is to protect the disruption of the petroleum supply. Then these are the high-risk areas that I mentioned earlier on. Both SAPS and SADF are on the roadside monitoring very closely, especially at Moy River and the other areas listed on the slide. Since then, we've had no incidents along these areas. Initially, travel was limited to daylight hours, but the road is fully open and we haven't had problems. We also paying special attention to the toll plazas itself to also protect the employees who are in these areas. In terms of the communication in interventions, this is cross-cutting. So there's a team that this is in partnership with NetJock and other cluster departments. They're doing sector engagements, assessment of the damages, dealing with the recovery plan, and public engagements on trying to address all the problems. And some of the target audiences include the investors, and there's a global outreach program in place as well. There's also engagements with the business and private sector. The specific plans of the department, as I mentioned earlier on, and it was mentioned by the minister, is to fast-track the implementation of the Single Transport Economic Regulator Bill so that we have policy and regulation to level the playing fields. We had problems in the past on the road where there was violence and protest actions because of the employment of foreign nationals in the transport sector. So we're working closely with Department of Labor and Immigration to address the exploitation by the employers in this area. One of the things that we have done is we've already gazetted the requirements for the public PRD permits. which the drivers need to have to drive these vehicles. Currently, there's a static protocol agreement where all licenses are valid in the static countries by the different member states. But when it comes to the PRD permit, there are some limitations. So we are introducing the similar limitations in South Africa. There will be processes to apply, and there will be validity periods. In this way, we will be reciprocating with similar practices in other countries, and we can curb the rising employment of foreign drivers in the country. So local drivers will be preferred. We will strengthen and continue to support the integrated law enforcement programs along the freight corridors. As mentioned, SANRAL has surveillance cameras, and these details will be shared as required. There's ongoing law enforcement joint operations, which includes unannounced visits to premises. The National Highway Traffic Police will participate in these ones. And then we are implementing the operator card permit system, which is in line with the National Road Traffic Act. And we will ensure that operators are now required to become compliant with all labor and immigration laws. We continue with implementation of the freight logistics strategy, which is three focus areas of the operator accreditation. Look at the policy and regulation to support back to rail strategy, and increase rail investments so that the operational efficiency can be improved. The SANRAL will continue with the National Road Development Plan to improve mobility in the country. RTMC is working with the provinces to restore the DLCA services, and we will continue with modernization of the high volume rail corridors, increase railway capacity so that we can improve the patronage and fare collection, improve passenger security and safety in the rail system. Whatever we do, whatever projects we implement, one of the outputs is we try to create more jobs. And then we continue to expand the integrated public transport networks. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will ask my colleagues to contribute if I didn't cover anything well. Thank you.
Thank you for that comprehensive presentation. And then probably then open the floor for clarifying questions and engagement from honorable members.
Chairperson.
Chairperson. Yes, Mr.
Kabiza. Chairperson, I just wanted to check whether my colleagues, whether I did say that it's a collaborative effort. I don't know whether in the presentation there's something that we missed so that they can augment some of the information. I just wanted them just to have 1 or 2 minutes before, Chairperson, you hand over to the honorable members. I would request that maybe, with your permission, Chair, ask the public transport unit or head Kivi Manana to show her face and add some few matters, or especially on the public transport issues there, as covered by our detailed presentation. I know they were part of this, and also ask Mwakoma Kaipie also to add some views and some clarification or maybe amplification of some of the points that might be not that much clearer. So I would, with your respect, Chair, I would request that we do that quickly, just 2 minutes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kaluza. Let's then get the identified people to make some additions.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Mr. Tabitha, and good morning to everyone, our minister and members of the committee. There isn't really much to add, just I think to highlight that in addition to the impact on infrastructure, the operations were also impacted because services were suspended. That meant then that operators were not providing services. And even after the services had resumed, the passenger numbers were still low.
In other services, they've been able to recover, and in others, they've not. And I think largely it must be due to people being unemployed now. And so, and also another impact that most of the operators or authorities have experienced is the loss of revenue. So we need to look into how then we're going to be recovering all of that. So basically, that's it. There isn't anything else to add. Thank you, Mr. Tlabisa.
Thank you, Kivi. Let me request my colleague, Yengwako, to please share some views on the race side, and then we can hand over to you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Yengwako.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee, Honorable Minister. Just in addition to what has been presented by my colleague, is that PRASA did stop the services during the time of the unrest in order to make sure that they secure the asset, especially the rolling stock. Hence, in our report that we are putting forward, there was no damage to the rolling stock. It was only to the properties in terms of development leases, because we did dispatch security to make sure that our depots are guarded in that particular regard. One of the critical aspects we want to highlight is on the development leases, especially with the damages that has happened in terms of the retail sector. We obviously, that will affect PRASA in terms of the income that we generate from our secondary mandate in terms of the payment of leases that is estimated at around between 18 to 20 million for the coming few months in terms of what we get. That's in a nutshell, Chair, that I wanted to add. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members and ministers. So that's where we end our presentation. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Let us then take this opportunity to thank you and your team for the presentation. I have noted the hand from Honorable Matevula. I've also noted a hand from Honorable Pratasa. Let's start with Honorable Matevula.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity, and thank you for the presentation. My first question will be, what temporary measures did your department put in place to assist on community where service centers are that are affected by the unrest, especially in KZN and Gauteng? The second one is, what measures have you put in place to assist taxi industries who are also affected by the unrest? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matevula. Honorable Professor.
Chair, thank you very much. Again, I apologize for my camera not being on, but as I said, I'm struggling with a bit of flu. Chair, you know, the minister speaks of rail, and in my various personal oversight visits to the harbour and assessing the transport system down there, it's quite clear to me that rail is one of those things that you would love to work. You know, only 3.5% of freight in South Africa is moved on rail. And obviously we would all like that to be different. But it does appear that the transport industry has moved past rail. It's kind of like if you were to make the post office the best service in the world, people will still send emails. And so the same argument follows. People will not stop sending emails because the post office is now working properly and it's the best service in the world. And I'm concerned that we should be putting focus on rail, but it cannot be seen as the total end-all solution to the problem, because simply because rail only takes freight so far, it still has to be moved by truck. By big truck and into a distribution center and then by small trucks. And so I would like to just hear from the minister in terms of What we are going to do to make sure that the road infrastructure supports the massive burgeoning of the trucking industry, because that is inescapable. And we will never have a situation where rail will deliver goods directly to a distribution center, for instance. It will not happen. And frankly, rail also takes too long. It is heavily complicated by a lot of red tape that one has to go through to get stuff onto rail. And also, it is slow. Goods are delivered from Johannesburg to Durban overnight and vice versa. And it's quick and it's efficient and it goes directly to the customer. So whilst I agree that rail is an important component in our transport setup, it cannot be seen as the cure for everything. And I'm concerned that we are not focusing as much as we should on the transport, on the trucking sector, in favor of this pipe dream of a fantastic rail system that I'm not entirely sure everybody will use in any case. So that leads me on to my next point, Chair, which is that the task team that was supposed to have been established to deal with the N3 corridor. Now, Chair, 2018, 2019, we've seen the problems at Moy River. This is a hotspot, and it happens every single year for varying reasons. This time it was unrest related to whatever the instigators were pushing, okay? It is obvious that it's going to happen there. It started on the Thursday after the former president was admitted to the Escort Correctional Facility. Is the minister truly telling us that no measures were put in place immediately on the Thursday, knowing that that would be a hotspot? It's been a hotspot before. And for me, that task team is clearly not working in terms of crime intelligence, in terms of being aware of the fact that that was going to become a hotspot. The closed KZN down hashtag messages were going around. Now, I know that the minister is very active on social media. They were going around on the Wednesday and the Thursday. For me, the blocking of the N3 corridor at Moira River was absolutely and utterly predictable. And then that also brings me on to Moiraville and Brantville. Now, Brantville, for those of you not familiar with the area, is an informal settlement in that area. It's a township development. And it appears to be a ready source of Jean provocateurs, a ready source of disgruntled residents who are quite happy to either be paid or to participate in anarchy. Because every single time that there's a problem at Moy River, at that particular toll plaza, where the trucks queue up in massive long lines to sleep over before they go down for the final leg to Durban, and they come there, and it's all the folks from Brentville, and they're a ready supply I'm not talking about all the people in Brantford, but it certainly seems that Brantford plays a massive part in the unrest that happens at that Moy River toll plaza. So, once again, the hotspot was there. Why was it not picked up? Why was it not closed down immediately? So the question I need to ask the minister is, has there been any consideration whatsoever to moving that toll plaza, moving it to an area that is more remote, that is not right next to a populated area where people are, it's easily accessible in terms of burning trucks, and perhaps moving it further back towards Johannesburg, maybe between Moy River and Escort, or further down the road where it is less easy to access? One of the presenters said one of the good things in this is that Santaco and others reduced their services, which meant that people could not move around as freely. Well, in Moy River, they literally have to walk across the road and start torching trucks. It's too easy, Chair. So has the minister considered the relocation of that particular toll plaza? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Professor. Honourable Khayyam.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and also thanks to the Minister for the opening remarks on this subject matter and the presenters. One of the issues that we keep on raising in the select committee when it comes to law enforcement and also safety is the issue of perhaps the department considering utilization of the drones to monitor both the roads, especially the freeways, and the railroad. Whether the if we could perhaps get an indication as to what is the department doing with regard to this matter. The second question is related to the infrastructure that was damaged, the some of the buildings as well as the roads and rail. So with regard to, for example, the other economic sector briefing that we've been getting from DTIC, small businesses, the indication was that some of the businesses are insured, and therefore SASRIA will come in with regard to the claims. What I'm not sure is whether, because I didn't see anything with regard to whether these buildings or properties are insured with SASRIA, these DLTCs and the also South African post offices that have been torched, others have been damaged. If I can just get clarity, because I saw something about 500,000 particular in Johannesburg. I don't know whether it's a claim that will be paid by the SASRIA, or is it going to come from the departments, both at a national and provincial level. But I also want to check with regard, as I was indicating, for example, small business development and the DTIC, there are monies that they have reprioritized in their budget, including IDC and the National Empowerment Fund. They have reprioritized their budget, but there are also money that are coming from the National Treasury. I just want to check that whether there are any monies from Treasury that are going to assist the transport sector. But also, what does it the unrest and looting and the destruction of property, what does it mean in terms of the impact on the department's plans? The next issue that I want to raise is that even before this unrest and the looting in KZN and Gauteng, there have always been challenges with regard to the torching of the trucks, particularly in KZN, perhaps and also other areas. And some of the complaints are that companies are employing the foreign nationals at the expense of employing the South Africans. I saw that there's a slide that talks to collaboration between the Department of Employment and Labor and the Department of Transport with regard to labor migration policy or laws. If there are any time frames with regard to that, because the issues that in KZN and Gauteng might be resolved, but if this issue is not resolved, there is no guarantee that the torching of trucks will not continue even after the problems have been resolved. So there's a slide that talks about the current state of South African food. There are specific number of days on which some of the commodities will be available. For instance, it says that the wheat will be, it will last about 50 days. If you check from the time that the unrest took place, it gives the impression, therefore, that we're past the 50 days. Now the question would be, do we have now wheat? Because the wheat that was there was going to last for 50 days. But also there are other products, that is sunflower, lost meat, and so forth. I don't know if that slide is not outdated. If it's outdated, can we be updated as to what is the situation of food supply in the country? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Khaes. Let me also add some few questions. I'm more attracted to a point that was raised around the magnitude of this violence on our GDP, and correctly so, it was pointed out that this looting that affected two provinces, these two provinces account for over half of South Africa's gross domestic product. And with regard to the point that was raised around the disruption at the ports of state logistics from Transnet in this instance, and also its impact in terms of delaying fresh produce exports. I also want to get a sense as to whether what is the situation now, whether to a certain extent there is movement there. I think this is quite important because definitely the expectation is that the impact will be massive in terms of our third quarter. The second point relates to the PCC. One of the key strategic interventions that is raised is around the revival of the residential infrastructure coordinating committee on the entry highway. I think the question that relates is directly linked to the point that was raised by Honorable Dato Seth, because I think from the presentation it's quite clear that this attacks mostly to occur during the night. So can we draw a parallel between what happened in 2019 and last year and this? I think the reason why I'm posing this question is just to whether, because I know that there's a team that has been engaging with the people that in the past touched the trust. Could they provide answers in terms of probably the experience that they've had in terms of how the disruption took place around Moya River, and also the strategic nature? Because I think what you heard was that the first major activity that took place was the touching of those two trucks, the blockaging of the road. So clearly you could see that obviously there was a sense of appreciating the impact of that in terms of disrupting even the accessibility of our law enforcement agencies to models that were taught. The
The last one relate to the point that was raised earlier on around the SADC countries looking for alternative routes as opposed to the N3 regarding the trust. At an international relations level, has there been an engagement between the department and probably those investors, or probably even the countries who were affected? I guess you have already pointed out when it started at the big British border, a lot of trucks had parked there for quite some time. Hence, they are now looking for alternative other areas. The biggest challenge will be for us as a country to lose the opportunities and the comparative advantage that we have as a result of our network. Has there been an engagement just to try to ensure that we don't lose this niche because it is quite important that there is that level of engagement to try to impress upon a business and those investors that indeed security will be provided because linked to the issue of investment is the issue of security. If investors are of the view that their trust will be crushed, there will be delay in terms of transport. Definitely, they will look for other means. So hence, I want to just ascertain in terms of authorities that we have in terms of what governs what is the public transport. What is it that we are doing to ensure that we convince them that indeed as government we are putting in place the necessary security arrangement to guarantee their safety. Thank you. Let's then give over to the team, and then probably the minister will guide in terms of how the process must unfold.
Chairperson, I had raised my hand. You didn't probably.
Oh, my apologies, Honorable Dango.
Yeah.
The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, and thank you to the team for the presentation. My question actually precedes the unrest. As the rail line that goes from Springs to Randfontein, which is completely stripped at some stations to the plinth, and now that I drive past, the fencing is being removed. And the rail line that runs from part of Soweto, especially Kliptown, that has similarly been stripped. And Minister, the stripping of these rail lines, I don't believe it's just criminals. This is counter-revolutionary. This is how it started in northern Mozambique. This is how it started in other areas. And I think we need to be very, very vigilant around the stripping of state infrastructure and have a legislation around the stripping of state infrastructure. I mean, the Kliptown police station, which is historic, is stripped to the plinth. Thank you very much. And when will that become operational again, if we can hear from the rail sector? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Dango. Honorable Minister.
Can Savisa and the team respond, and then I will level up to some.
Thank you, Minister.
That have been raised.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson, and members of the committee and my colleagues. We are going to take turns and respond to questions, as my colleagues have been noting them. Let me start with the introduction of the drones. From Honorable Hai, especially on the monitoring of the major corridors that are affected recently and also previously with the current torching of trucks. and the looting thereof of cargo along the in transit. I think that one at SANRAL, because these major corridors they are managed and controlled by SANRAL, which is one of the entities of transport that is managing the National Road the Asset Register and the management thereof. So I know that they have been looking into, using the drones in making sure that, because there were a lot of stealing of cables along the corridors just to make sure that the toll gates are not functioning. So they have been looking into that, although they do have online and up day-to-day security on strategic points where the major infrastructure is that is managing, controlling also the running of the toll gates. But right now, SANRAL has been looking into the drones. Yes, of course. The only challenge that now they had when they were looking into the project itself in its entirety is that the drones, unfortunately, at night, they can't work, yet these incidents are happening at night. So when I was talking with the leadership of SANRAL and the management there, they were looking at the specialized cameras that can also try to focus and identify those kind of shenanigans that are happening along the corridors at night. So they said it's quite an expensive exercise, very expensive equipment that needs to be installed. But they are still looking into that and making sure that these kind of drones are employed along major corridors, your N3 or N1, where these incidents have been taking place. And from Devon towards the city deep here in Gauteng, and beyond that towards the N1 from Pretoria, Gauteng towards the Limpopo, and those kind of major corridors. So that is the project that SANRAL is looking into very seriously. And it's quite an expensive exercise, but they haven't dropped the ball to that. Nothing is falling through the cracks. They are working through that to see what is that they can do. They're saying these specialized cameras are quite expensive. So that is where it is now. So it's a project that they are embarked on so that they can assist all of us along these corridors. That is the first one. I think on the issue of the reprioritization of budgets, yes, I remember at the asset clusters of DGs, after this unrest and also the meltdown of economy, National Treasury has been very central here with the Office of the President in ensuring that the budgets are being reprioritized, including DTIC, because they are also looking into the to the development of our economy. And the likes to support our economy, the rebuilding of our reconstruction and reconstruction of our economy. And that is where it is now. At the DG cluster, this is what is being done. What we can do is to firm up maybe at a later stage to see what is it that has been managed insofar as this is concerned. Talking about the reprioritization projects, we would not have the figures right now to see how much is being, provided insofar as the support of the small business, insofar as these other local authorities are concerned. But as transport, I would just confirm that we do not have a dedicated budget that will be ring-fenced to deal with the hardships that has been happening. Except that we have deployed our law enforcement agencies along the major corridors, as the minister alluded in his opening remarks, in ensuring that this is very safe, the corridors are safe, and so forth and so forth. But when it comes to the reviewal of our indicators and targets on our annual plans, yes, that is what we are doing, because our plans have been disrupted since COVID-19. Inception and until now. Now this has also been happening in terms of the factory that has been happening in our construction sites, particularly where SANRAL is working, where you find that there are serious delays insofar as the implementation of those programs are concerned. So with that, when you plan to deliver so many kilometers of roads, it's going to be very impossible to do that because of those kind of challenges. But we do have the catch-up plan with the provinces when we talk about the implementation of our programs, where We are partnering with the provinces in the implementation of those infrastructure programs. We are working very closely with the provinces insofar as the reviewal and of our technical indicators as well as the annual performance plan target are concerned. That is what is happening now. So it's a continuous project and program between ourselves and our partners, our delivery partners, our delivery wings, and our agents insofar as this is concerned. Similarly, it's happening with SANRAL. We review their plans also because they are directly affected with the unrest in the communities when they are building the roads. So that is what we are doing insofar as that is concerned. The prioritization of budgets, yes, that has been discussed in detail. Insofar as to reprocess budgets to alleviate hardships as a result of the looting, as a result of COVID, we had to start it way back during COVID and to redirect funding as to and to make sure that is what is happening. So on the touching of trucks and that has been happening. Yes, is correct for some time. It is a result of those allegations of our South African drivers. Who are forming themselves into some movements of some sort, who are saying they are fighting the foreign truck drivers who have been occupying the space here in the market space within the trucking industry in South Africa. So that is why the Department of Labor and Employment is leading this together with Home Affairs, because we felt that they need to lead this because it's more about the labor issues, as well as how do we people come in into South Africa to look for job opportunities. So Home Affairs is very central to this. That is why Home Affairs are working very, very closely with the Department of Labor and Employment. We are also participating very strongly as the Department of Transport, because we have got an interest in what is happening on our roads. We don't want any disruptions on our road network. So that is why we are partners insofar as this cluster of ministers is concerned, but we don't lead. The Department of Labor and Employment is leading, and also supported by other departments as well, like ourselves. I would at rail to talk about the affected areas within the rail space. How that is being handled. But I can just say that the disruptions, what is happening in Moy River, yes. That is why Minister was alluding to a fact that the JCPS cluster is very much on top of the game. And they have been identifying quite a serious number of incidents that has been happening there through intelligence. And that is why you will see that it has subsided. And this kind of ill discipline and the sabotage of the economy from the coast to the inland is being snipped on the butt, because you see some arrest that is happening through the sister departments in government, which are part of the JCPS cluster. So yes, it's happening at night, and it's quite a very disturbing incidents that are happening. But you want to believe that it's going to come to an end, because we do have deployment. Even now, you see the SANDF is fully involved now in those corridors, and they are visible. They are very, very visible, and you can see that everything is coming to normality. Yes, the issues of the SADC protocols and the SACO MOUs, we strictly stick to that, and we work collaboratively with the SADC regions, EAC and COMESA, insofar as the issues of safety are concerned. We talk about employing our road-based entity, which is called the Cross-Border Transport Agency, which is our implementation arm insofar as the coordination at SADC level is concerned, insofar as the governance of transport, the transport governance through the borders of South Africa. And those are adjacent to our countries, or the sister states within the SADC region. So that is what is happening. It's a continuous engagement between ourselves through this this unit, which is taking a patent from ourselves and directive and mandate from ourselves, from the minister, and ensuring that we do engage on a regular basis insofar as the governance, the transport governance through the borders are concerned. Yes, introduction of this big infrastructure that is running between Zambia and Zambia and Namibia via Mozambique is quite taking a lot of trucks away from the N2, the N1, and the N3. But we are constantly talking to the issues of the governance issues between the countries, in ensuring that our N2, our N3, our N1 are safe, because there's a serious deployment. Even the SADC region, they can see that the government of South Africa is doing extremely well in keeping those kind of ill discipline and lawlessness on our road network. So I think it's not going to be easy for the people to leave the harbour of Durban and go somewhere else, because it's the shortest distance when you go inland from using the N3. Although it's a road base for now, but the moving cargo from road network to the rail network, that is what the minister is pushing us to do. That is the freight logistics strategy, which is part of moving cargo from the road to rail. And that is handled by our unit, which is the ITT, and together with us, we are very much involved at the Rose Branch. So that is one of the cutting edge policy document that the minister is wanting us to do, moving the freight from rail from road to rail. So that is where we are now. But serious engagements are happening. I will ask my colleague Mwako to talk about the splitting of the rail lines and fencing, which has been an albatross on us as a department because of this saga that has been happening across the precinct of the rail space, with those people who are coming up and take our signals and causing all of chaos within our road network. I will ask my colleague, therefore, to take us through that in Wakoma Kaipia. Will take us on that. So if there are anything that maybe I've left out, we'll be guided by our Honourable Minister. But let me ask first my colleague Mwako Makaipia to take us through that. I will also ask Kibi if I've left something on the public transport space, where there was a clarification question from the Honourable Members about from Mema Tebula about the service centers and the taxi industry as to how we are dealing with those kind of as a transport department. Except that we do participate, I must say, we do participate in Prof Joint as well as the national joints, where the JCPS cluster is very central to those kind of activities, where we also play our role in terms of the development of those plans and the action agenda to deal with those kind of issues that has just happened. But I would like my colleague Kili Manana to take this after my colleague Mwako Makaipia on the rail space. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Minister, then let me just hand over to my colleagues and maybe to take us through that one as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DDG Kabisa, Honourable Members and Chairperson and Minister. Just to bring clarity on some of the issues that have been raised by the Honourable Members. Firstly, on the issue of stripping of the network in terms of the rail line, we do agree with Honourable Member that this is a very serious matter that we are concerned about as the department. And in how we've been dealing with it is that through the leadership of the minister, we've been engaging with other members of the security cluster to be able to look at this issue, so that it's really classified as economic sabotage, because we believe that these are just acts of really trying to destroy the infrastructure that government has. And we know we have had those kind of challenges, and COVID-19 was even worse in terms of how our rail network was attacked. And with PRASA, we have developed a plan of how we then recover our corridors, especially starting with our super core station and corridors in Gauteng. And then one of the approaches that we are doing in terms of making sure that we secure our rail network and be able to run proper services is that as part of the corridor modernization program, we will be starting with corridors like Mabopane Line, where we'll be putting the walling to be able to secure the infrastructure. And in addition to that, rehabilitation of putting the, there are some security innovation that we are putting, which will be putting in the issue of technology to make sure that we have armed response, e-guarding in terms of installation of cameras. And the one of the elements that the Honorable Member Wright talked about in terms of the drones is one of those technology mix that we are considering working together with PRASA moving forward. So the broader security approach is really to make sure that we first secure the corridors, and when we then secure the corridors, how do we then bring other interventions to make sure that beyond the physical security that we have employed, that we are insourcing internally, we're able to deploy technology to assist us to respond quicker on those particular issues. With regard to the generally on the recovery, on the unrest, we, yes, part of, in terms of what we have in our secondary mandate, will therefore reprioritize some of the budget, especially in some of those areas where we have some damage of our, where we have big tenants to be able to recover the income. But majority of some of those stations are part of our insurance portfolio and will be submitting some insurance claim across some of the damages to be able to make sure that we start to deal with the recovery and make sure that the tenants we can fix and the tenants can be able to move in into the space. That's the, in a nutshell, that how I'll then respond to the question. But maybe just to then say, the Cliff Town line, as part of when will it be able to be operational, it's one of our second phases of those lines that we want to corridor to rehabilitate and fix. And we have even got some approach from some guys in the private sector who are willing to work with government in terms of fixing of that particular station. And we are having some engagement in that regard. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I can ask my colleague, Kiri Manana, also just to add some few issues there, which I highlighted as the notes that we made from Honorable Mathebula. I will ask my colleague to do that, the service centers and the tech industry insofar as, but I did allude to the JCPS cluster that occupies the agenda of the Prof Joint as well as the national joint insofar as the coordinated approach is concerned. But let me ask my colleague, Kibi, who heads the public transport unit in our department, to take us through that. Thank you, Kibi.
Thank you, Mr. Chabisa. There were three questions. The first one is the relief fund for the taxi industry. Just to indicate that as a department, we have not received any requests for relief from the industry, even at a city level, both in eThekwini as well as City of Johannesburg, there hasn't been any request for relief. And so there isn't really any dedicated allocation of funding from National Treasury for this. In eThekwini, though, the mayor, based on the role that the taxi industry played during the unrest, he's been engaging with them and he's set up a task team to make sure that they become part of the recovery plans that are currently being developed in the city. And in both the two, yeah, and so in eThekwini, yeah, I did indicate that they haven't received any request for relief funds. The second question had to do with the insurance claims to Sastria. Both the two municipalities that have been affected, eThekwini and Johannesburg, are submitting claims to Sastria. Both of them did indicate that they were in the last stages of ensuring that Sastria makes an assessor available to then confirm the costs that they estimated so that an approval can be made for their claims. And then there was a third issue around the impact on the department's plans. With regard to the City of Joburg, they are continuing to operate the Rea Vaya services, even though the four stations have been damaged. The one station that has been seriously damaged, that's where the operations are not taking place. But in the other ones, the damages are very minor. So they're continuing to operate. And then the second one in Go Durban, because it hasn't launched the C3 corridor as yet,
they are not operational. But because of the damages, this will impact the date of the launch, because they were supposed to be launching their services in October. They've indicated that it might impact it by 30 days or so. So basically, that's where matters are. I don't think there's any other question. I think Mr. Sabisa responded to the issue around the community services adequately. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister. We would like to pause here. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, no, thank you, colleagues. First, on the security matters, the net joints continues to, I mean, not the net joints, the National Security Council meets, and we have been reporting to the National Security Council in terms of security concerns. I think it is now well accepted that from the President's brief to the nation that we could have done better and we reacted timely on some of these activities that took place of anarchy and so on. Henceforth, after consultation with the multi-party forum and parliament and all of that, there was a joint consensus for extra deployment of SANDF supporting the police, and that is what is happening now. Most of the, I think we have read also in the public domain that most of the people who are implicated have been arrested, and as we continue to see that happening and so on, so which is commendable on the part of the police. Today we are reporting on what this has cost us. So it's not just a small matter, just a normal looting and all of that. It was an extraordinary looting and with targeted intentions to cripple the economy. So, and at the same time to weaken the security apparatus of the state and render the state weak. And in that sense, anarchy will reign and everything will just come to a standstill. So that was the ultimate objective, simple as it is, rather than the polemics flying around us, what do we mean? When you want to achieve political goals, which are not anything other than political goals to bring down the state, you target the economic machinery. And if you talk about the heartbeat of the economy, freight industry and transportation is key. And in this particular instance, if you kill the N3, and the N2, particularly Joburg and Durban, where in which the transportation of goods is by road, then you have affected the economy. And then you kill the entry points and all of that, and then the country will crumble. So people come to ask, what is happening now when you talk about unemployment and all of that, staggering figures? We are at 36-something%, which is the highest, and all of that affecting youth and women. Even those who are at least trying to survive have also been affected. And then you ask, we have a pandemic on the other hand. On the other hand, we've got this particular anarchy that has got a ripple effect on the functioning of the economy. So in this particular instance, we need to understand that this it was not even a strike. It was something that they wish could generate to a general strike. In political terms, a general strike would have meant that the workforce withdraw their work power and refuse to go to work, support the anarchy. They did not. People were intimidated. And these were acts of sabotage, sporadic, and all of that. It was not spontaneous. It was planned. Something spontaneous is something that you join because your blood is boiling about an injustice, and you simply get yourself in. None of us who joined the struggle today can define the moment, the time, and the date they decided to join. They joined because the township was ungovernable and every entry point was shut down because people were fighting against apartheid. And you find yourself in, and in no time you are arrested, you are in jail. And then you are a political prisoner or you are a political detainee and all of that. This was not the case. This was simply acts of sabotage, well-organized, orchestrated intimidation, and running down the economy. So it needed the state to do as it does now. Of course, our people have now realized that joining the looting has not been an answer because they tended to be affected, not only in their pockets only in terms of unemployment, but also in terms of food redistribution and the functioning of the local economies and all of that, and small MMEs has actually affected them. So that is the case. So the security had to be heightened to a particular level, and the National Security Council has had to intervene and do that. And we applaud the taxi people who, on their own volition, without being commanded, said, no, we cannot, for economic reasons, because we are tied to this local economy of malls and all of that. If you kill those malls, you kill our business. Go to Alex. I went there, the taxis were not operational. And then they had to pay for their taxis and all of that. And they don't have money to do that. They know that they were going to be affected. And they took a decision. If you remember the incidents of Port Elizabeth, where taxi owners were going all over PE with some of the people who were, were purported to be involved, going around telling people that there is no strike here. So this thing did not engulf the entire nation and all of that. It didn't. So our people simply walked away from it. So now we are faced with the consequences of that. So Chairperson, we are under no illusion that about the limitations of rail in relation to speed. However, we cannot turn a blind eye to the damage to our roads as a consequence of heavy freight moving on our roads. It is on this basis that feasibility study on high-speed rail between Pretoria, Johannesburg and Durban will cater for passengers but also for freight. The work update, the National Freight Logistics Strategy, will pay attention to the futuristic evolution of freight movements in our transport network and ensuring seamless integration across all modes. This must be balanced by investments where we make investments we make in transport infrastructure in enabling the implementation of the logistics strategy. We don't have that, and we're in the process of implementing that as we speak. We don't have a rail policy. We're in the process of implementing that. We've got a white paper process of the rail policy that we are finalizing before end of the year. You are right. That is why PRASA has intervened decisively on matters of security and to ensure that the vandalism that we have seen, you know, that has escalated during the period of the shutdown, is not going any further. You have seen the deployment of heavy security in our network. As much as there was attack, attempts were made, but it could not. They were stopped right in their tracks. It was fire with fire, and the rail network was well protected. And if we had acted even during the shutdown decisively like we did now, we would have minimized the extent of the vandalism we have seen, which now falls also into the program of revamping of the infrastructure in terms of our rail network. There are also plans to move the Moi River Plaza toll. This is a matter that must be dealt with through a comprehensive risk assessment by SANRAL in collaboration with the concessionaire, considering the cost implication of such decisions. So there's an honorable member who basically asked this particular question. So it has been considered, particularly as we speak at the present moment. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That will be my contribution, adding to what members have given to the committee in terms of the details and also the political context and understanding of what we are dealing with and our intentions going forward. The effect of this violence that have engulfed us in the past 2 weeks, we will still feel them in the next couple of years to come. And by that time, we will have forgotten what happened. But nonetheless, that is the consequence of becoming a ruling party and government. You lead even in difficult times, and our task all the time is to explain and to act and intervene. So the package of interventions we seek to make, even this afternoon, as we consider the recovery plan, it will also entail some of these things that we have talked about today here before the select committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, for the manner in which you have addressed the responses that was made by your team. I want to believe that members now are in a much more better position to appreciate the implication of the unrest in both KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng on the transport sector. We will continue to monitor specific plans as part of the recovery effort that were outlined by the department on reversing what has happened. The team led by the minister was able to clearly illustrate to us the implications cost-wise, the trucks that were tossed in terms of numbers, the estimate in terms of passengers that were affected by the N3 route closure in KZN, the total number of vehicles that were also affected as a result of the closure of the plazas, and the team was able to isolate those sites from the hook to May South that were affected. And the presentation also put before us the road closures and also a number of employees that were impacted upon by the unrest in those in the hook in Volga, in Tugela, in Mwea River. But I think what is quite important to us is the cleanup that has taken place. But more than that, the key strategic interventions that were put before us, particularly as people at the economic cluster, I think we appreciate that, Minister. More than that, the key government communication interventions and who's in charge has put before us. But like I said, the key specific plans as outlined in the last two slides will be of key interest to us, Minister, in terms of interacting with the implementation of this plans as part of the recovery effort. So allow me on behalf of the honorable members to indeed express our gratitude to you, Minister, and your team for the pain and effort that you took to appear before the Select Committee to address us on those two letters of presentation. We have outlined the processes that will follow with regard to the Single Admission Amendment Bill. But like I've indicated with regard to the presentation on the impact of the the unrest on the transport sector. We are then able to augment the picture that we had from other areas that we need to engage more so in, from the economic cluster, so from the trade and competition cluster. We were able to see further pursue on this. But now with the transport sector, we have a complete picture in terms of what is it that has to be monitored, what is it that has to be followed as a way of ensuring that the hardship suffered and also impacted on our economy is mitigated. Thank you, Minister. You are now released as we finalize our in-house issues. Thank you, Lord Minister and your chief.
Thank you very much, Chair and members. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Honorable members, we have two sets of minutes.